the MadTech podcast special, focusing on the most important topics in AdTech and MarTech.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the MadTech podcast. I'm Matt Broughton, Senior Editor at ExchangeWire, and today we're going to be examining the future of UK advertising in the cookieless future, feeding in insights from an upcoming Insights and Attitude report produced by ExchangeWire Research in association with ShareThrough. And I'm delighted to be joined by a trio of special guests today, and they are Frank Maguire, Vice President of Insights and Strategy at ShareThrough. Hello to you, Frank.
Hello, happy to be here.
Wonderful to have you. Richard Ottoy, General Manager EMEA at ShareThrough. Hello to you, Richard.
Hi, Matt.
And Susie Ryder, Chief Digital Officer at LMD UK. Hello to you, Susie.
Hey, happy to be here.
Wonderful to have the three of you, and we'll dive straight into the findings. The first kind of section of findings we'll examine is looking towards behavioural tracking and preparation for cookieless ready. Now, according to the survey, behavioural targeting and cross-site tracking underpins around 36% of UK media spend and media sales. However, there was a dramatic difference in the perception of how much UK media relies on this kind of tracking, with brands on average suggesting just 14% of their spend goes to behavioural and cross-site tracking, while publishers believe in excess of 63% of their sales uses this kind of targeting. My first question to you guys is, where does the true figure lie, and how should the industry approach trying to reconcile this difference? Frank, let's start with you.
Yeah, you'd think that I actually like looking at the agency number. I think it was somewhere in between both those in the 40% range. I feel like usually, and Susie can probably correct me if I'm wrong, usually has the best indication of how much budget goes towards specific types of targeting based on line items. But I also wonder if it's somewhere in between where, publishers also rightfully so have a big concern over what's going to happen in the cookieless future if behavior goes away. And, in some cases might overestimate how much that revenue is to, make sure that they're prioritizing that as much as possible. So that they're ready for that cookieless future, and that concern that they could lose a good amount of revenue if behavioral targeting totally goes away, or what that future is. But I feel like it is probably somewhere in between, and maybe that agency number of around 40% is the right one.
Susie, can you help clarify that?
Yeah, I think probably one of the reasons there's such a difference in perception is probably a lack of visibility. There is a real lack of visibility, which is quite difficult to manage across the buy side as we seek to access audiences across such a large ecosystem. So it doesn't surprise me that publishers are probably overestimating the amount of data applied on the buy side, because they get such a limited view about what targeting is being applied on the DSP side. When publishers see sort of restricted delivery on certain deals, it's often because there's loads of different hygiene factors that could be in place that could be limiting ad selection even before that audience buying is applied. And that could be anything from, say, pre-bid settings to avoid buying non-brand suitable content, first-party data exclusions, limitations in the formats available, or frequency capping, just to sort of offer a few examples. So I think it's really important that publishers sort of work with the buying teams in the agencies to ensure that there is that alignment on what the desired audiences are upfront, and if there are any guardrails that need to be in place. And I think the publisher audiences applied in the SSP will be a great way for publishers to really maximize their own audience data, but it will definitely involve more work with us and client teams to make sure that the collection and the use of that data really aligns with, I guess, the risk threshold in terms of how they feel comfortable using different types of personal data.
Richard, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think it's probably unsurprising that publishers use obviously a lot of behavioural targeting, because it really helps them scale an audience. And obviously they've got a very sort of concentrated view of obviously how they are targeting and packaging their inventory and their audiences. I wonder also if that sort of perception would change depending on who you ask within an agency. I think probably a programmatic trader is going to have a very different view than maybe a planner within an agency. So, of course, there's lots of different sort of targeting and things that exist within the plan, not just sort of behavioral targeting and cross-site targeting. So, you're probably going to get a different view depending on who you ask.
Absolutely. In terms of how optimistic the UK market is in terms of the deprecation of the cookie, they're generally quite quite optimistic. We kind of rated their confidence and they're a kind of a 5.4 out of 10. So generally leaning towards the more confident side. But does that figure match up with what you guys are seeing within the industry? And what more can be done to help prepare those that aren't quite yet ready for the phasing out of the cookie? Richard, what are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I think, I think I'm actually quite encouraged by that score. It shows that the market is working towards how we can survive post third-party cookies. And it tells me that we're probably not going to have a repeat of the GDPR when that hit in May 2018, where everybody just kind of went full ostrich and did nothing until the deadline and then kind of ran around like mad people trying to figure out how they maintain their revenue and whatever it might be. So now I think I'm feeling quite optimistic about that score. Although, the industry is so reliant still on third-party cookies that I think until they've actually gone, we're not really going to have any sort of big improvements in this area. And I think over the next couple of years, even when the third-party cookies have gone, there's going to be a lot of testing and learning that needs to be done by all corners of the industry to really understand kind of what solutions provide scale and performance. I think if you're a publisher, there's going to be a lot of sort of siloed demand coming through, which publishers will need to support in order to try and maintain their revenue. This is going to be in the form of sort of first-party authenticated solutions where you can match your audience data with an advertiser. Obviously, there's various third-party identity solutions which need to be supported because a buyer may want to use a particular ID for targeting purposes. But then also those identity vendors will also be bringing demand to publishers as well through their own sales efforts, which could be quite attractive to publishers. So lots of testing. And of course, we're also all looking at what Google's going to build, which looks like it's going to be in the form of some kind of cohort solution where publishers can obviously make their audiences available within the various cohorts for buyers to target. I think kind of a cohort solution is the right sort of way of thinking. I think there's something in these cohort solutions, but my only sort of nervousness about it and the sort of cynic in me says that then Google's going to be marking everybody's homework because Google's going to be telling everybody who within a particular cohort has converted. And will those same cohorts through a Google stack versus a non-Google stack perform very differently? And I think we probably all know the answer to that. So, I think, as I say, feeling fairly sort of optimistic about that, but we're probably in quite a good place already.
Good. Nice bit of cautious optimism. Frank, how does that finding kind of compare with what you're seeing throughout the industry?
Yeah, it was interesting. Same with this question, looking at the breakdown of how ready pubs feel versus agencies versus brands. I think pubs were most confident, followed closely behind by agencies, and then brands were kind of far behind. So, which I think probably lines up. I think brands still are kind of grasping what this means. I think and Susie could probably speak to this too. Like agencies are definitely the expert on it, and probably have to do a lot of education to their brands to help them understand what this is going to mean in the future. We haven't fully reached the point of cookies being completely gone, but I also wonder how much. Brands realize how much things like analytics are going to be impacted by this and, what they're doing to prepare for that. And are they building up their tech stack through, whether it's CDPs or, first party data and getting themselves ready for what might happen. And maybe that question is directed to Susie, if like how you've been working with, I know you guys do a lot of education with brands and, is there a lot of education required and how is that going?
Yes, I would say there is constant ongoing education and as news of what's being developed in the industry evolves, that will continue and some of the recommendations may have to pivot depending on what's released. But I think just to circle back to the original question, for us, the deprecation of third party cookies is really just part of a wider movement to improve consumer privacy across the web. And we very much refer to all of those different work streams at OMD under an umbrella term of the future of addressability, which references all of those different areas that we believe are associated with a privacy first future. That obviously includes restrictions to the use of cookies across all of those major browsers, but it also includes for us things like restrictions on mobile tracking, Google restrictions on ID level targeting, data compliance requirements, and also data ethics considerations as well. Just focusing quickly on the Google phase out of third-party cookies in Chrome, obviously that does get the majority of our time and focus at the moment, probably because the Chrome browser has such a significant market share, but also because it's going to massively impact how we activate within programmatic media. So would I agree with the optimism that's expressed within the Insights report? I'd say difficult to say, but I would probably err more on the side of caution. I think losing third-party cookies will fundamentally impact the way campaigns are implemented and managed by brands, as they were foundational technology in enabling advertisers to track and use online behaviours, such as targeting audiences. But that impact will be felt not just across targeting, but also across optimization, measurement and attribution. We actually use a client readiness assessment framework to help us evaluate against a set list of criteria where action may be needed in order to ensure that the brands that we work with are prepared as far as in advance as possible of these changes. And I guess the outcome of that assessment is a readiness score. And that gives us a clear list of tasks that need to be focused on to finalise any preparation that's required. But I think the biggest misconception that we see is that all of those actions to prepare lie in media activation and therefore sit with the agency. As an example, testing alternative targeting options could be one of those things, when actually there's so much preparation that could be required on the brand side as well, which could involve teams outside of marketing, such as privacy, legal or technology teams, which is also about making sure that they've got consent set up in an appropriate way on their digital real estate, but also making sure that they've evaluated any data they want to use within third-party activations and are comfortable with how that consent is being collected. So that's going to involve lots of different stakeholders from within our clients' businesses. And I think it's important that they involve and bring together those stakeholders as early as possible so that they can plan for that work that may need to be undertaken, because it needs to be planned for and that time ring fenced in order to help that preparation. But in terms of sort of making sure that from an analytics perspective, are brands aware of the impact of removal of cookies? You know, first party cookies will endure, but they will become a much greater area of focus for regulators themselves, as brands are the data controllers most of the time. And therefore, they are responsible for gathering the right permissions to use that cookie data. So getting the right consent permissions is really important to ensure that the future of that analytics data is adhering to regulation, it holds value for the brands, and it is still scalable. So do brands realise the impact of some of those changes? I would say probably only partially. I think the more obvious implication is that loss of third-party cookies rather than analytics implications. On-site and measurement solutions that are owned by tech vendors such as Google Analytics, GA4 will become much more compelling for brands because it will inform more cross-channel touch points. With Google sunsetting Universal Analytics next year, any brand that is using that platform really needs to prioritise finding an alternative solution, as it will no longer collect data beyond that end date. Now, GA4 will be Google's alternative. Whether that's right for brands, it is for them to complete their own evaluation. But ultimately, it's about making sure there is that single source of truth, but it unlocks greater value and insight from the data that it's collecting, and that it's also privacy first for the long-term future-proofing of how that data is collected and used.
Absolutely.
Susie obviously touched on attribution, which for me is still one of the sort of key areas in all of this, because one of the sort of big unanswered questions at the moment when it comes to, you know, once third-party cookies have gone, is our ability to measure the performance of campaigns. Because today, a buyer, it has the ability to be able to identify and target an audience. Obviously, they could use their own first-party data. They could use publishers' first-party data or third-party data or a combination of those things, right, to reach their audiences. But without third-party cookies, the only way to actually measure the performance of that campaign can be done through emails. unless I'm mistaken. But so, you know, unless if this is still the case once third-party cookies have gone, then addressable audiences are going to become quite a bit smaller, I think.
I would definitely agree with that. I think contextual is definitely going to be one of the leading forms of targeting, at least in the short term.
Awesome. Shifting focus towards programmatic investment. Now, the survey, you know, investigated several different components within digital advertising, attention, engagement, conversions, brand safety, and contextual relevance to see which would be the most important for market participants. And across the board, brand awareness and viewability was the most important factor across all surveyed company types, closely followed by user engagement. Now, are new and kind of evolved metrics needed beyond the CPM to, you know, measure these factors, you know, awareness, viewability, and engagement, or is simply an evolution required, Frank?
Yeah, I think we've definitely seen an increase in focus on the idea of like attention as a metric, in some ways as a proxy, because, you know, if you have someone's attention, you're more likely to increase awareness or lead to better message comprehension or sales, whatever it leads to. But in our industry, it's pretty difficult to measure attention as like a ongoing metric in your existing campaigns beyond viewability. I mean, viewability is like kind of a proxy for attention. Like, was your ad even on the screen for someone to see it in terms of digital? And then for like TV or CTV, I mean, there's a couple companies that have like, you know, cameras that can measure if someone's actually in the room, but it's pretty limited. But obviously, that's a huge problem. You know, we've been doing some of our own research on that at ShareThrough, trying to, you know, understand what degree are people actually actively paying attention to ads in different formats. And like, we did a study recently that showed that about 76% of people are not actively paying attention during commercial breaks on TV, and that shouldn't be too surprising. But you know, how do you account for that in your ad performance, and what are things you can do to help improve upon that attention? And that's something where we've been trying to dig in deeper, since there isn't like a go-to way to measure that in real time. We've been trying to test this on consumers and see, you know, we saw one of the biggest reasons why people aren't paying attention during commercial breaks is because they pull out their phone. Like, that's the first thing I do. I've realized since the survey that like, as soon as it cuts commercial, like my hand is in my pocket, my phone's in front of my face until it gets back to the content I wanted to watch. So we've been looking into ways of, you know, using that distraction as an opportunity. And actually, interestingly, with the growth and popularity of QR codes, we've seen some actually early indications that actually including QR codes on TV ads helps pull attention back onto the TV, onto the commercial, since you already have your phone in front of you. You know, in the US, we saw, you know, that Coinbase did this amazing Super Bowl ad that was just a floating QR code that did, you know, amazingly well for them and actually broke their site because it was so popular. You know, that's one instance of it, but we've seen that just including a QR code in TV ads can actually help improve that attention, in addition to the additional attribution and metrics you get from almost making your TV ad clickable. So we've been looking into things like that can help improve attention, and then finding ways to automatically add those, so as part of the existing way you buy, you know, CTV through ShareThrough, for instance. We're also doing that through, like, you know, another example of that is like online. We saw that people usually have their phone on mute, and so even when they see a video as they're scrolling through content, they're usually, if there's no captions on it, which I think 90% of videos don't have captions, they're just going to keep scrolling. So we also launched a product that automatically adds captions to videos at no additional cost, because it's just a better user experience. So I think there's a lot that has to be done in an industry like this. There's like, measure more about consumer attention, since there's no standard metric to it. And then little changes like adding captions or even little things like QR codes can actually help pull attention back to it, which then end up leading to better performance down the line in terms of awareness and brand metrics and sales and beyond.
Interesting. Susie, how's that kind of evolving on the agency side?
I think we definitely need to start trying to find some new metrics beyond CPM that help to measure attention and engagement. And I would also argue that, you know, brand awareness shouldn't necessarily be one of the most important factors. I think we should be pushing for more. And we know that if we can get a greater level of engagement in that mid-funnel consideration phase, then I think there's a much greater business outcome for brands from our personal experience. But we have got really good at buying placements with high viewability. So that is a huge improvement from where we have been in the past. But it obviously doesn't really tell us much about whether that ad has been noticed, acknowledged, or paid attention to. And high viewability isn't always a good thing either, because sometimes that can be achieved by using intrusive formats, which is going to give the user a negative experience of the brand. So I think attention is definitely an area that we want to understand more in terms of how viewability and attention correlates and the effects of attention on campaign goals. But I think there's still a lot of work to do to really understand what that looks like and how that can inform how we work moving forward. We are in the process at OMG of beta testing an attention planning tool that will sit within our marketing precision platform, Omni. It's being tested in non-UK markets at the moment, but I'm really genuinely excited to see the results of that beta and to help understand what that could mean for how we work in the future.
Interesting. Definitely looking forward to seeing further results on that front. Richard, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think for me, this all comes down to trust. Sort of trust and transparency is a topic that we've been talking about across the industry for a long time. Does the advertiser have complete trust that their ad is going to appear against the intended user and environment? And unfortunately, the answer often is no, they don't. To my knowledge, viewability or attention has never really been brought into question in other mediums. Advertisers have complete trust that if they buy an ad in a magazine against a piece of content, it will appear there. And similarly in television, if they're going to buy an ad to appear within a commercial break within a program, it's going to appear there. And if it doesn't, they don't pay for it. But unfortunately in digital, that's not the case, right? I mean, the barriers to entry, I think, are just far too low. And over the years, it's become very easy for someone to create a website, pretend that environment is something that it isn't, and of course not have human eyeballs looking at that content in an effort to attract ad dollars. So I think it's only natural that as a result of that, buyers have started to look at other metrics like viewability. I think largely it's sort of the job of the creative to grab the attention of the user. And it's the job of the publisher and the publisher's partners to ensure that the ad is going to appear against its intended user and environment. So maybe existing viewability metrics need to be revisited. I think arguably 50% of an ad appearing for 1 second in front of a given user, regardless of the creative, is probably going to struggle to grab the attention of the user. But the letter of the law states that that's a billable impression and has to be paid for. So again, I think a natural evolution is to start to look at things like attention metrics, making sure that those ads have been seen and the user has shown attention to it. So I think we just need to be, as I say, it comes down to trust. We need to build more trust. And do we need to become more regulated as an industry to build that trust? Obviously, we're starting to see that with various privacy regulations coming in. I think it's inevitable that we will become a regulated industry at some point. We're far too big. What are we now? $700 billion a year industry. But that's going to take a lot of time, and it's probably not going to be a global regulation. So I think in the meantime, brands and agencies, and we're starting to see it now more as well with publishers, I think over the next sort of 12, 24 months are going to have fewer sort of more trusted partnerships where they can be much deeper with those partners to ensure that the ads are being delivered against the intended user. And I think we'll also start to see more sort of self-regulation as well, such as things like Tag TrustNet, which was created between Tag and Fiducia, where participants are expected to send log-level data through to the platform so the supply chain can be audited down to the impression level. And this obviously, this was born out of the PwC ISBA supply chain study that was done a few years ago, where too much revenue was unaccounted for. So I think, again, fewer sort of more trusted partners will participate in these kind of initiatives, because as a business, if you've become a more trusted partner, it's probably fair to say it's because you're bringing value to either the advertiser and or the publisher. So you probably don't have anything to hide. So you're happy to provide that kind of data to your partners. But as a business, if your objective is to extract value for yourselves, then you've probably got something to hide. You're not going to participate in these kind of things. And I think your business is going to struggle as a result.
Interesting. I think that kind of trust in the supply chain piece brings us on nicely to one of the next findings in the study, whereby the historical performance of supply-side platforms was taken into account in the vast majority of SBO analyses, with only 6% of respondents not taking it into account at all in their analyses. Frank, what do you think on that one?
Yeah, that was actually very encouraging to see. We work on a lot of SBO analyses directly with large holding groups and sometimes individually with brands. And usually they're, pages long worth of RFI questions about, specific details across your exchange and how direct your supply is, which is all like really important to making sure you have the most, the best supply path possible. But oftentimes we don't see questions or sometimes even accounted for historical performance of those SSPs as part of SPO. And oftentimes we'll then like have separate conversations sometimes with brands about like polling performance by those SSPs as part of the indication of like who has the best supply for their advertisers, because I guess at the end of the day, supply path is trying to have the most direct path, so you have less the most working media dollars towards buying that inventory, so that you have better ROI for your clients. But obviously, if ads are performing better on certain SSPs versus others, that can obviously also help drive down ROI. So it's really encouraging to see that is a big difference between UK and US markets, where that already is built into the SPO analysis and looking at that performance difference between SSPs. So that was definitely encouraging to see.
Awesome. As well as looking at different components of programmatic advertising, we also looked at several different channels within programmatic, including CTV, native display, out of home and audio. And quite interestingly, display was favored by brands, agencies and publishers, even the smaller scale firms, which are otherwise a little more pessimistic about increasing their investment in programmatic. So my question to you guys is here is, what are the potential reasons behind this strong showing for display across all surveyed groups? Susie, let's hear it from the agency perspective.
Yeah, I don't feel like we see pushback from brands at all on programmatic anymore, particularly around programmatic consolidating spend into programmatically activated media. I think, we've spent a lot of time investing in education, engagement with clients in this area. I think display is very much viewed as the channel that has the scale, but I was genuinely quite surprised to see the result of the survey, because for us, I think, we continue to see investment in programmatic increase, but probably the growth is coming from video and connected TV rather than from display. And I think that will continue to be the case for a while. I think that we have made huge advancements, just referring back to some of the information that Frank has shared in terms of the transparency that we're able to offer. And so maybe that's why there is such a hugely warm feeling towards display as an activation or channel within programmatic, because I think we are able to give the brands that we work with a lot more information and exposure into how that particular ecosystem is working, and much more transparency into that supply side. Our particular capability in this area is called Marketplace, and that has really helped to ensure that as much of their ad spend is being spent on media as opposed to on ad tech, and that transparency, I think, is really reassuring them and encouraging them to spend more.
Awesome. Richard, what are you seeing in terms of why displays proving so popular at the moment?
I agree with Susie. I think it probably comes down to a scale sort of reasoning, in that Interestingly, if you look at the results from a brand's perspective, CTV was, I think, the lowest ranking in terms of that programmatic investment. Yeah, obviously, as an industry, that's where we're seeing a lot of the growth. But this this was a study based around programmatic, right? So, and obviously, a lot of CTV is traded outside of programmatic ecosystems. And a lot of the scale was in banners and videos. So, it probably just mirrors the scale that's available programmatically in the ecosystem at the moment.
I think the other thing that I would add would be that in general, you know, digital in general, but display in particular, is going to offer a lot of agility and flexibility to brands, which has probably been quite important over the last couple of years in particular. And, you know, display offers that scale. It offers that opportunity to reach new audiences and bring them closer to your brand, as opposed to search, which is about reaching people that are already demonstrating an interest. So I think that's probably also got something to do with how favorably it's viewed at the moment too.
Absolutely. Moving into the final sort of section that the study covered, obviously we've seen a large growth in focus towards ESG over the last 6 to 12 months. So we wanted to look at how carbon footprint that tech provided is kind of leveraged into the selection of those partners. And we found that within the next year, the majority of UK market participants are likely to prioritize ad tech partners, which decrease the carbon footprint of their products. And more importantly, 40% are highly likely to factor this in within the next year. So my first question to you guys is, what's your impression of that finding? And also, how can brands, agencies and publishers determine which tech providers and meaningfully lowering their carbon footprint? Richard, let's start with you on that one.
Yeah, I think it's unsurprising. This is obviously kind of high on the agenda. As an industry, the sort of carbon emissions that are produced is very high. It's a significant contribution to global emissions. So, unsurprising. I think partner evaluation, I think that goes into kind of the SPO efforts and things like that to evaluate what partners are doing in this area. And I think really to be able to kind of help understand where media dollars should be going, who you should be partnering with, is trying to understand sort of firstly their contributions, but then also what they're doing to sort of offset and reduce those emissions themselves. So I think a lot will be done over the next sort of 12, 24 months to help just the industry be more knowledgeable in this area and where partnerships can be formed and things like that. But quite an exciting area, I think.
Absolutely. Susie, how's it looking from the agency perspective, and how are OMD looking at lowering their carbon impact?
I was quite surprised to see that 40% figure. And first of all, I think I expect to see a high percentage having an intention, but I think the reality of having that framework in place to be able to evaluate ad tech partners is probably going to take a long time to reach any sort of maturity. But I think it's great that there is that intention, and there are things that people can do now, and brands can do now, and publishers and agencies can do now. In terms of us as an agency group, OMG are signed up to Ad Net Zero, and we've committed to reaching net zero emissions by 2030. We've also engaged with Green Element to audit our carbon footprints here in the UK. Now, of course, the IPA have launched their media carbon calculator, which essentially enables brands and advertisers to calculate the carbon footprints of the end delivery of a media schedule. And it does that by using a range of different data sources, including, for example, DEFRA, electricity emissions, and things like that. And it's really focused on reducing emissions from media planning and buying. So obviously that is one small part of how we should be approaching this. We are working with the IPA to continue to evolve that foundational tool. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done to, again, ensure it reaches maturity and an element of sophistication to how it's currently working. And I think, you know, ultimately, whilst there is an enthusiasm from brands and advertisers to want to take carbon into their consideration list, they ultimately still need to make sure that their ad spend delivers on the business outcomes. And I think there could be a period of time where there is friction between those two areas. And I think if, you know, the first place we start when we're talking to brands about this. And by the way, not all of the brands we work with are asking these questions at the moment. But the question we have to ask is, what goals do they have in this particular arena? And are those clear? Are they clear and are they measurable? So are they looking for carbon neutrality or are they looking for carbon net zero? Because they are two different things. And that helps us really determine what the best way forward is. We're also in the process of finalising the list of partners that we work with who do support carbon emission and climate change pledges. But, you know, the headline is that there is still so much more to do. Some of the partners that we are engaged with, that's our class, we class as green-oriented media partners, would be Goodloop, Seenthis, GoodNet, We Are Eight, Scope 3 and Climate Partner. And they're definitely ad tech partners that we are beginning to see a real, that is their primary USP in terms of how they offer media solutions for brands. And I think it's great that we have those partners in place, but we're certainly not at a point where those partners can deliver on the marketing KPIs that we're trying to deliver against with that ad spend for our clients.
Interesting. Similarly, Frank, what are ShareThrough looking at in terms of actively lowering its carbon impact?
Yeah, that was encouraging to hear, Susie, you're taking that too, and also even having that list of partners. Actually, we're working with one of those partners that we're hoping to announce in the next couple of weeks, who kind of helps us understand the effects and how much, kind of like your scorecard, how much carbon is emitted with every ad impression. And we're working on a solution that would allow us to be, I think, one of the first SSPs to offer very specific ways to offset the impact of every impression delivered and the carbon impact of that. But exactly to your point, like our focus is also like, how do we do this in a way that doesn't impact or decrease the effectiveness of your ads? You know, for instance, if there is an additional cost to offset the carbon emissions of that. So that's something we're actually really excited to hopefully be launching very soon. And we're also in tandem doing some consumer research to understand a few things. Like one, like do consumers even like know that just generally browsing the internet impacts carbon emissions? And we still don't have the full results, but early indication is like they had no idea, which isn't surprising. Like you wouldn't think that browsing the internet has somehow an impact on carbon emissions because you don't understand the data servers and everything that goes into loading every single page. The interesting thing that we're starting to see though is that consumers actually are willing to do something once they realize that to help offset their carbon emissions, including things like maybe spending less time on certain sites or things that drive carbon emissions. I think the only thing they definitely weren't willing to do is like have like a tax on themselves to based on their internet browsing, which is not surprising. So it really is up to ad tech. I think that really does lead a lot of the back end loading of these pages that leads to the carbon emissions to help offset those. And so I think it really is on us. And I'm excited that we're going to be a part, and I think from the first to really help make sure that we are offsetting that. But to your point, making sure that you're able to do it in a way that you can still have the effectiveness of your ads and still offset those carbon emissions. So more to come on that.
I think it's really great that as an industry, we're really engaging in this topic because I do think it's really important. I think we've always spoken about the complexity of the ecosystem that we work in, and that complexity is really going to make this a challenge to scale this quickly. Understanding how or what our media partners' commitments are to carbon neutral or to ad net zero is going to be such a huge task for us to undertake because there are simply so many partners that we work with within that supply chain. So I don't think we can underestimate how much of a task this is, but it's really welcoming and encouraging to see how many people are committing to it.
Yeah, actually, I saw a really interesting stat as we've been doing this research too that really helped put in perspective how much carbon emissions come from just internet usage and generally from ad tech. It's actually on par with the entire airline industry, which you see as a huge carbon emitter. And overall, internet usage is almost equal with the amount of carbon emissions. So really help put in perspective, like how big, it's not just this little thing that, you know, oh, it's not going to make that much of an impact, but it actually can have a huge impact on the world.
Absolutely. But it's just hugely encouraging to see that that awareness coming through and actual meaningful solutions being brought about to, you know, to reduce those emissions. That just about brings us out of time. But Richard, Frank and Susie, thank you all ever so much for your time. It's been a wonderful discussion and great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks, this is great.
And that was this week's Mad Tech Podcast special. Thank you all ever so much for listening.